He was offered the job to blow off the Alfred P. Murray building in Oklahoma City. He turned it down because he felt that it was a patsy job. The pay was so low compared to this type of job. He has delivered incredible information. I think he's one of the most important whistleblowers, and with such knowledge from the inside in the belly of the beast.
You know, you have an inkling a lot of times in the back of your mind that they are false flags, or they're going to be Apache op, like the Oklahoma City bombing. There's a lot of people that see the darkness and see the deception, and it revolts them in their spirits, and they just can't take it anymore.
Do you want to save some serious money? Learn how a simple gadget can double your gas mileage while creating less pollution. The simple gadget does all this while giving your car more power and longer engine life. Learn more with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Ole Damegard back, and he brought his good friend Cody Snodgrass with him as well. And Cody has been a black ops with the CIA for over two decades, and he came out and became a whistleblower, and he is here to share some of that information with us today. And we also talk about, you know, the huge upsurge in activity, false flag activity or terror activity in August, what that means. And we talk about in general where things are going, and Cody gives us his experience with that, what goes on behind the scenes, what it means to be a black ops, and how the media is involved and heavily involved. And then they stay after, and we talk about mind control and censorship and how that comes together and what that means and the apathy of the people. And that's for my patrons, and you can get that at the link below. And so I appreciate my patrons. I really do. So anybody who is a member, I really appreciate you. And there is a lot of exclusive content for you. And we talk a lot, and I can't get to all the messages that I get from all my different sources, but I really try to get to my patrons first. So thank you so much for being there. And I also want to remind you of an upcoming cancer summit that is going to be free. And it starts at the end. Well, I have the start dates here. I have the link below. And it's all about what we know about cancer. Obviously, what we know about cancer is a lot different than what you're going to hear in the mainstream media. So if you have any loved ones or anybody you know who has cancer, or you want to be prepared, because what, 1 in 6 people get cancer now? It's a ridiculous statistic. And we know how to deal with cancer. We know how to heal cancer. We know how to keep people from getting cancer. And these are the experts, the cutting edge information on cancer. It's all free, and I'll have the information below for you. So let's get into my interview now with Ole and Cody. Hi, Ole and Cody. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you for inviting us.
You know, I should let Cody just say thank you here quick.
Oh, no, it's wonderful. You know, to be here. Thank you, guys. It's an honor to be with Ole, and it's great to be with you, Sarah.
Well, I took a little bit of a break. I went and visited my son, and I took a little bit of a break, so I'm refreshed. I was excited. I'm like, I get to talk to Ole, and he had so many good comments to say about you, Cody. But I was just like, oh, this is a good one to come back to, because it's such a, he's such a kind soul, and I just, you know, with all the dark things I cover, it's really nice to have somebody that it's like, oh, okay, somebody who's kind and that I know is kind and that we can just, it's a good one to come back to. But I wanted to talk about your background, Cody, and how you and Ole met.
Would that be okay if I answer that first and then Cody comes in?
Absolutely.
Because about a year, no, it's almost a year and a half ago, I was contacted by Cody by email. And it was, I get a lot of strange emails from all over the place. And here was another one. And then there was this guy called Cody here who said that he had been a black op private contractor for more than 20 years, that it had come to a point where he was involved in so many different operations. And at the end of his career, when he was starting to suffer from all kinds of post-traumatic traumas, stress syndrome, and also problems with alcohol and drugs because of the high pressure that had been for so many years, he was offered the job to blow off the Alfred P. Murray building in Oklahoma City, the one that then was blown up a year later. He turned it down because of patriotic reasons, but also because he felt that it was a patsy job. The pay was so low compared to this type of job.
And it was, wasn't it? That was the patsy.
And at that time, he turned from an asset into a liability. And after that, he was exposed to several attacks, and he died twice. He flatlined twice, where he had a near-death experience, where the second time he died, he came up and he met his angels. He saw the whole madness, what he had been involved in, and he met his angel. And together with his angel, who offered him to go back down and say, we got a lot of hard work in front of us, if you're up for it. And if you are, then I'll join you. And Cody accepted, and boom, down they came. And this, I hope you don't mind me saying so, Cody, but that is why Cody often refers to himself as we, because it's him and his angel. So it's like very interesting combo of a former black op that has been involved in all kinds of horrific stuff, now joined by an angel helping to lift the world. So when he told me his story, I said, I'll do anything I can to help you step forward as a whistleblower, because he had kept quiet. He had kept under the radar for more than 20 years, waiting for the Clintons to get out of the White House, because he had done some work under them, and he knew that if they were still in power, then his day would be counted very easily. So we prepared for some months, and the only safety net you have, or the only type of security you have in a situation like that, when you step forward as a whistleblower with explosive info from the inside, is to pump it out there to as many as possible, as fast as possible. So we lined up 3 to 5 shows per day, and then the day we were gonna start, it was November last year. And the very day we were going to begin with the very first one, somebody fried his laptop. It was hit by some kind of thing that almost smoke came out of it. But we continued, and then we did, I don't know how many different shows together. Like I called Cody normally at 5 in the morning, 5 a.m., and then we just went from there. And so He has delivered incredible information. I think he's one of the most important whistleblowers, and with such knowledge from the inside, in the belly of the beast. I mean, people like myself, we are walking around guessing, trying to figure out how they're doing it. Through Cody, you can get direct info, so it's so valuable. And then also, with such a beautiful person, because this is who he is.
The cannabis industry is expected to grow from $150 million in 2018 to over $57 billion by the year 2027. This is a ground floor opportunity, and Greenflower has a free ebook showing the 500 best jobs available in this huge expanding market. Click the link below to learn more and to get your free copy.
So, Cody, when you were doing these black ops, were you aware that at first, maybe eventually you were you aware that they were false flags and they weren't legitimate? I mean, as for what they say they were going to do? I mean, were they lying to you?
You mean, did you say false flags?
Well, yeah, were they, when you were doing black ops, were they lying to you as far as what the purpose and intent of all these things were?
Oh, well, a lot of times we did not know the purpose or intent. We operated under standard black op procedure where the information was compartmentalized, and a lot of times we wouldn't know who our contacts were. They're people we never saw, we never knew them, but we had a code, and we just used a code, and that's how we knew that our contact was there. So, yeah, it's to minimize blowback in case anyone gets caught or tortured or, you know, you don't have any information to give up. It's a need to know operational basis. That's what a lot of backups are.
So it protects you as well. But when did you start figuring out that you were a deep state operative doing things that were not, you know, that started leading to your depression and all your, you realize that I'm not doing what I should be doing?
Yeah, that, you know, when I started out, you start out generally, you know, with lower level assignments and stuff. And then if you can stay alive and you accomplish your missions and you minimize the blowback and your principals are happy with your work, then, you know, your word spreads and your name gets around to certain people and you get more and more jobs. And depending on what the jobs are and the level of complexity, you know, you have an inkling a lot of times in the back of your mind that they are false flags or they're going to be Apache op, like the Oklahoma City bombing. And you know these things, but you have to weigh that against, you know, the amount of money you're making and how deep the operation is going to go and, you know, the risks. There's always risk. We did some bodyguard work. We did a lot of different things, and some of the risk was real high. So it's a hard question to ask. It's kind of like saying, how long is a string?
So, but for a while, did you feel like you were being a hero, like you were a patriot, really doing things for your country?
Sometimes.
Oh.
And sometimes, you know, we didn't have the luxury of having that much information. You know, we had a specific mission to accomplish, you know, like taking something to point from point A to point B, and we tried not to engage in speculation or anything like that. We were too busy focusing on the operational requirements of whatever the black op was.
Okay. And so, but was there a point where you said, where you started to realize?
Yes.
Okay. And how long into your career did you start realizing it? I mean, at some point you're kind of deep in and you can't, did you feel like you couldn't get out? So, okay, so how far were you in? And at what point did you feel like you couldn't get out? Both questions.
Yeah. It just depends on what you know going into the operation. I mean, it depends on what you're told ahead of time and then what you see when you're in the middle of it. And there's a lot of times, you know, we felt like we were never going to get out. There's a lot of times I didn't think I'd survive to, you know, to end the mission. So, and then in the case of what Ole was talking about on my near-death experience, that was in Project Slammer, and I died twice in the hospital there, and I had to shoot back. But that was a covert assassination program with the CIA, and there were times in the middle of that that I never thought I'd make it out. I never thought I'd stay alive.
Wow. Okay. So what were some of the assignments that you were involved in that we might know about?
Well, you won't know about them because we have a thing in Black Ops, you know, that it's the old thing, like the CIA says, you know, our failures you hear about, our successes you never do. And so if you conduct a Black Op correctly, almost nobody knows about it except the people who are involved directly in it and the principals who hire the particular operation out. And, you know, the civilians in whatever country you're in or the area that you're operating in, nobody knows about it.
Unless it's like an explosion on a subway or something, right?
Oh, sure. Like the Murrah Building, you know, that was a black op, but they had to have a cover for the operation. And, you know, so it depends on what you're doing. It depends on how high level it is. If it's just a bodyguard operation, you don't have to worry too much about covering your tracks. But if it's something high level, you know, like the Murrah Building, you've got to have a cover to a cover. You've got to have media control. You've got to have a lot of help controlling subordinates and investigators and so forth. So it really just depends on what the op is. But we did a lot of different kinds. We moved ordnance. We moved military ordnance that had been, you know, black market stuff in the MENA, Arkansas thing when we were involved in CIA Operation Centaur Rose down there, you know, arming the Contras in Nicaragua. All that story's in the book that I wrote, Choosing the Light, Dark Secrets of the Oklahoma City Bombing. And we tell the story about all that. And how they were moving the cocaine and the drugs back. We moved a lot of ordnance. We bodyguarded people. We did security on safe houses and high-level black ops. We also did black-on-black stuff where they'd have a black op going somewhere, and it went south or went sideways in the middle of it. And so to minimize any further blowback, they call guys like us in, and we were black on black, and we were sent in to clean up a black op that went sideways. So some of it gets real deep, and some of it's pretty straightforward.
Well, how involved is the media? Is it a complete controlled media?
I would say the mainstream media, Time Warner, you know, all those guys, it's very highly controlled. You know, they began all that back with Operation Mockingbird and, you know, back in the 50s and stuff. And at one point, the CIA director said in Congress at the Frank Church hearings that they had at one point 400 or so agents and all in Operation Mockingbird. You know, some people know about this, some people don't, but CIA is heavily involved. They infiltrated our American media here, and then they've done it all around the world, and they use strategic deception and propaganda. But I'd say the mainstream medias in America here are heavily, heavily controlled. The information's controlled at the source, and one of their standard tactics is to put out about, you know, they put out 80% truth in a news story, and they get people hooked on, you know, listening to it. They check a few facts, and it all looks good on the surface, and then they slip in the 20% propaganda or 20% lie, and they're real good at that, masters of it.
Now, does anybody ever go rogue? Do they just get fired right away if they go rogue and actually try to tell the truth?
Sure. You know, there's a whole lot of people who see things that go on, and then they have to weigh their careers, you know, their pension.
Like Greg Hunter and all these people that used to work there, they just can't stand it.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of people that see the darkness and see the deception. And it revolts them in their spirits. And they just can't take it anymore. And, yeah, that leads to drinking and can also lead to real suicide. It can also lead to murder that's made to look like suicide if they talk too much, you know. But, yeah, in the media, it's highly controlled here. And the alternate media, like what you're doing, and some of the other guys like Greg Hunter and the rest of them, you know, they have a more – they're not on the corporate chain, you know, of advertising dollars being held over their heads and pensions being lost and threatened. And a lot of guys that sign the national security oath, some of them are CIA agents, and their fronts being a journalist or a photographer, say, for the New York Times. And they're actually sitting agents. But they can't tell anyone that because they've signed a national security oath. And they can't even talk about it or they go to Leavenworth.
But do you think there's some sitting agents now in the alternative media? Is it obvious to you who they are?
Sometimes it's not obvious because these guys are pretty good. They're chosen, you know, for their ability to remain undercover, okay, and to fade whatever type of investigations happen. But you have to watch them for a while, generally, because like I said, they'll put out, if they're going to put an undercover agent in the alternate media and they want to infiltrate the Patriot Movement or the Truth Tellers or whatever, or, you know, those architects for 9/11 that are trying to figure out what happened at the World War, those guys, you know, they come in, they do some hard-hitting stories, they seem to get the truth out, and then after a while, people, you know, you drop your guard because you want to believe some of the stuff.
Yes, yeah.
What they're doing the whole time is keeping lists of all the people who are and what websites they're going to, and they're putting it all in a big computer, just like Edward Snowden tried to warn us about Facebook surveillance and all that kind of stuff. But yes, there's definitely undercover agents scattered through the whole media, whether it be the alternate media or the normal NBC, Fox News, CNN type of thing.
Now, how can people learn who they are? I mean, people think, you know, I get accused of that, and I'm just, I wish I had the paycheck that came for being part of the CIA. But it's a legitimate concern for people, you know, because I think I'm more, a little bit more professional. And so I'm really serious about doing this and I really care and I can't back off. And so people sometimes are like, why the heck is somebody like her up there doing this? And I could see, I'd be questioning that. But so it's a legitimate question. What can people look for when they're looking over and not be fooled and say, okay, this is, because the same thing for me, you know, I get my sources. I'm like, well, are they real or not? And so what can people do and make sure they're not taken for a ride?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, what I always tell people is, you know, learn to listen with your heart, not just your mind. Okay. We're the most powerful as human beings when our mind and bodies and spirits are all aligned together. If your consciousness unified instead of fractured, that's when you're most powerful. And when you're at your most power as a human, like you have woman's intuition, Sarah, you can kind of feel, you know, when someone's BSing you or not. You got this little feeling inside of you. Another thing people can do is to cross-reference many sources. You know, there's a lot of open source material that's not classified that gets out on the internet. And if it's not on one website or one article, it may be in another. And so we tell people to cross-reference as many intelligent sources as you can, okay? And then go, you know, look through it all, get a general consensus, and you can weed out a lot of the propaganda and the deception by doing that. And then, of course, in the end, you have to go by your own feeling and your own heart, because the CIA, the KGB, the FSB, MI6, Mossad in Israel, all these intelligence agencies are masters of propaganda. They're masters of strategic deception, and they're masters at using the media in their particular country to mold public opinion and even go so far as mind-controlling their civilian bases. So it's a good question, and you know, the answer I have is to listen to that little voice inside and then do heavy, heavy research. You know, like go to Ole's website. He's got that vault. It's 30 years of his research. And you can get into that. You can get into different websites and different places and really bore down. And if you really want to, you can file your own Freedom of Information request if you have the time and money. You know how it goes, Sarah, how they give you the big government runaround on a lot of that stuff.
Well, a lot of people don't have that time. I mean, they're just trying to work and take care of their families, and they have a little bit of time after work to sit and do this, relax, and learn. They really don't have the time to figure out who's legit and not legit. It's driving people crazy, being honest.
Sarah, that I'm a former journalist. I say former because I used to be proud of calling myself a journalist, but the way I see it, there's very few left, at least in what we call the real media. And I met up with a man just a few months ago who had 40 years as a journalist. He's been working for CNN, BBC. He was part of starting Al Jazeera. And he was in Hong Kong when Snowden and so on stepped forward. A real heavyweight, a real veteran as a newspaper man. But he was so depressed, and just like Cody said, you know, he was just, it was eating him from inside, because he said, we're not journalists anymore. There are no journalists left. It's all taken over. It has to be the fastest and delivered right away. Nobody's checking out any facts. It's just standing like with a near sewage opening and just aim it in whatever direction. Nobody's checking. It's just flowing right through. And he said it has nothing to do with journalism anymore. So he was deeply depressed, I tell you. And this is what I call a real journalist. He was sort of one of the old school that really dug into stuff, heavy hitter. He said he could get a job anywhere in the world, top pay, but it was eating him alive from inside.
Yeah, who wants to get top pay just to be a puppet propagandist for the government and not?
Lots of people do.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, you're selling your soul. That's the example of selling your soul. And it's the whole point of journalism is to root out evil, I think. I really do. I think that's the whole point of it, is, and to bring light to people, because I bring a lot of things on the edge of science and say how things are changing, but things are changing so quickly that we have to be smart about it, because it could really, I mean, it could go really great or not so great, and let's get our hands on this. And I want to bring things that can help people, because people are suffering everywhere. But that being said, a journalist is really a fourth pillar of a healthy community in our community. You know, if you have three pillars in the government, I mean, it's, or you can say as a government's one pillar and media is the second pillar. If you want a healthy community, you need that journalism going in and rooting out what the hell is going on.
And that needs to be separate from the government, because the government are one of the sources or the forces that needs to be held under personal responsibility, you know, keep the light right at them, saying, we see what you're up to, just stop all of this crap and do what you're supposed to do. That, I would say, is a major task of the media, to keep them in control and see that everything is the way it should be, expose whatever corruption that. But nowadays, it's come to a ridiculous point. It's been so hijacked. And when I look as a former journalist, I think what we're doing are what journalists are supposed to do. I mean, but they don't do it, so we have to do it. Yeah. It's the same with the police. It's the same with the government. Mm-hmm. They're not doing what they're supposed to do, so we have to do it ourselves. Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I'm pretty tired, and so So I would love them to just step up, do what they're supposed to do, and let's get this whole thing back in balance.
That's why I took a vacation a little bit here. It was refreshing. I didn't do anything. I just stopped. It was really good. But let's talk about August, because that's one of the things that we talked about, is August had this huge surge of false flags. So what's going on? What are the false flags that are out there, and why?
Okay, Cody, go for it.
No, I just wanted to back up for just a second. You know, a lot of people don't understand, we're talking about the journalists, how far it's gone. This CIA Operation Mockingbird started back in the late 40s and the 50s, when television was replacing radio. And in 1948, Congress passed the Smith-Month Act, which authorized the U.S. State Department to disseminate propaganda outside the U.S., but specifically forbade it to do so inside. So in response, the CIA formed a black op that Congress didn't know about, and they called it Operation Mockingbird. And their idea was to plant disinformation in the U.S. media, and it was a classic counterintelligence tactic, okay? And they worked with the 4th Psychological Operations Group at Fort Bragg and so forth, doing PSYOPs. And at the, you know, one point they had 400 CIA agents were active in the media to doctor the stories and change them and make things favorable to the CIA and the black ops community. And it included Frank Wisner, The Washington Post, Richard Helms, you know, there was ABC, CBS, NBC, UPI, Scripps Howard, Copley News Service, Associated Press, Hearst Newspapers, Reuters, et cetera, et cetera. And this also was going on, Sarah, back in the 50s, and now they've fine-tuned it, like Ole's talking about. They're using supercomputers and Photoshopped pictures and all kinds of stuff as an extension of this program, and it's still going on now. So, yeah, the media, what we're getting into in August, like you're talking about, they're masters at using the media after a false flag. Okay, they can plant evidence pre and post operation, and then let the media and their control of the media take up any slack. You know, if they make a mistake or do something really silly, they can cover it up with the media. You know, and so.
Well, it's like the shooting in Florida, the school shooting. They had black ops on camera leaving the school with bags. And nobody even, mass media didn't question it. And then if you questioned it in the alternative media, YouTube was shutting you down, or you were being called a conspiracy theorist nut job. It's like, well, why wouldn't we be asking what that is, you know? We're a nut job by asking what that is? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's how they do it. And the CIA came up with...
It's ridiculous. Well, the Smith-Mundt Act has been... in 2012, they made it legal in the United States to do propaganda. They expanded it. Why did they feel the need to make it legal now in this country versus doing it as a black op?
Well, they're
because
gonna...
then they can get away with it.
Because it just, then it could be in our face. I mean, then they didn't have to worry about it. It was cheaper. I don't know.
It is in our face. No, but now they're able to fool us anymore. So they can't be made responsible for these false flags that are being pulled off all the time.
Maybe because it was becoming too known that they were doing this, so they have to make it legal so that there isn't any repercussions. Do you think that could be the reason?
That's the thing. But who would do a thing like that? Criminals do things like that. Yeah,
so we're dealing with criminals, so you can't really have, because they're criminals, it's hard to have a logical reasoning around this. Everything's illogical because they're criminals. You're cutting out a little bit. You're cutting out. You're cutting out. Are you there? Oli, okay, you got to restate that because you cut out that whole time.
Okay, nowadays there's so much that is absolutely upside down. I mean, the ones we think we can trust are the ones that are actually doing these horrible stuff to us, and so on many times. And also the numbers of crime statistics and also the numbers of alleged school shootings in the U.S. I know, I think it was last year, there were 235 reported. That's 235. That's a hell of a lot. So when starting to check it out, it turns out that there were actually 11 reported, and multiple of those were false flags. So how many real school shootings were there really? That is a major question that should be asked, because so much of this, what we are looking at, is just not true. That's the whole thing. It's just not true. And one of the things that you have to look out for is when you're not allowed to ask questions, what is that? The truth fear no investigation. So why are they trying to shut you down? Why are they shutting down YouTube videos about false flags? Why are they shutting down Cody's and my interviews like almost within 24 hours, 48 hours, boom, they're gone?
That's what people have to question. And I don't mean to interrupt you, and people hate it when I interrupt, but whenever there's questions, like Jake Morfonio's going to the Las Vegas thing with all those journalists, and they kicked him out because they didn't want him asking questions. And then the journalists that were in the room wanted them to ask questions before they kicked him out. They're asking because they couldn't ask the questions. So they were having the other, you know, the independents ask the question. Whenever they stopped, like the Florida shooting, when you couldn't ask about those black ops leaving with a bag outside of the school, whenever they say or they make you into an idiot for asking legitimate questions, then you know there's a problem.
Totally. And